Since you started working with people, what would you say are the most common issues that you've discovered? How would you categorize it?
People will come to me and they'll say, I'm depressed, I've got anxiety, I've been labeled a bipolar, and they'll give me a list of mental disorders to kind of, give me an understanding of where they are. But what they don't realize is none of those words actually mean anything to me. So for me, I'm always wanting to find out what is the reason for this. A lot of people think there's something happening to them, but they don't understand it's a feedback. And once they address the feedback, then those emotions can dissipate and dissolve forever and permanently.
Hello, Emmanuel. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
I went through the work you do and I was absolutely inspired by just how far you've come and how you've been able to reach out to so many people. You know, one thing that interested me is thinking, how exactly does someone with your background get to where you are now? Not that it's shocking, but just it's interesting to know how people become who they are. And I think everyone has a story, which is one of my favorite parts of doing this podcast, hearing people's stories and just how they discover themselves and become who they are. Could you please share that with us?
Yes, I can. So, for me, the journey started at about 4 years old. Came to Australia, and my family had left from Rodrigues Island, which at the time was like a third world country. And when I came to Australia, I spoke fluent French, but everybody in Australia obviously spoke English. And so that was a little bit of a challenge for me, trying to figure that out and socialize. So, being able to make friends was one of the biggest challenges I had. So, as I was learning to speak English correctly, I kind of left my French behind, but I had to use all the rest of kind of my senses to figure it out. Because until I could properly feel like I could verbally connect to people, I started watching and observing them. So you could say that I was a human behavioral specialist at the age of whatever it is that you're in grade four, and watching what popular kids did with their hands. What? How did they say words? How did they emphasize them? And then I would go and test that out like a comedian testing out material on an audience. I would go and speak to other people and then see how they reacted. And then I'd come back and I'd assess that. And I was doing a lot of that from a very young age. So being picked on in primary school and not knowing how to communicate led to these voids in wanting to get as strong as I possibly could and defend myself, and then wanting to figure out how to verbally communicate and how to be an expert at that, or how to do that at a very high level. So it's that journey kind of went through to high school, and high school was the opposite way around. One of my cousins happened to be very popular in high school, so I went from unpopular to popular basically overnight as soon as I entered the school. But it happened so fast that it kind of shocked. It was a shock to the system. And in doing that, then that led to wanting to find out about human behavior even more, because I was meant to be cool, and a lot of the cool guys are picking on the kids that weren't that cool. But I didn't really get that, because I felt that that was me about 2 days ago, and now I wasn't meant to be in that role. So a lot of these interesting dynamics have led to me becoming a bodybuilder, then mastering that part of my body, then becoming a nightclub promoter, and then a doorman, and all of that kind of stuff. And that I kind of mastered the social realm, but I felt that psychologically I hadn't really mastered that part of me. So I could communicate to others, but the internal conversation of myself was something that I wasn't understanding. So I started attending workshops. I saw Tony Robbins, Deepak Chopra, and they were all good. But it wasn't until I heard Dr. John DeMartini speak one day. A friend of mine just invited me and said, I think you'll be interested in this. And I think it must have been fate, because the minute I heard him speak, I knew straight away. That was the smartest human being I'd ever heard communicate with in my life. He was talking about physiology, psychology, biology, astronomy, all within a sentence. Every time he spoke, it was like drinking out of a fire hydrant. I always had to, he would say a sentence and it'd take me 10 minutes to deconstruct what he was saying, but I knew that he had something that could help me. So I signed up to one of his workshops, and I flew from one part of Australia to the other, kind of from the bottom all the way to the top, to a place called Perth. And I worked on my emotions around my father, and using the DeMartini method in, I think it was about 4 hours of learning the method in a group of 100 people, I let go of 26 years worth of baggage towards my father. And when I came back to Melbourne and flew back, he and I completely altered and changed our relationship. And that was kind of the cornerstone of me starting to realize that whatever I just learned from this man, if I could do that in 4 hours, I had to have been able to teach people how to do that in 2 or 3 if I just went one-on-one with them. So that's kind of the journey that led my challenges, that led for me finding out how to solve my own problems. But in doing that, got very inspired to assist others to learn how to do the same thing.
Wow. Wow, that's quite the journey. And since you started working with people, what would you say are the most common issues that you've discovered? How would you categorize it? I know people have a broad range of problems, but maybe at some point, some things start to stand out to you and you just, you know, there are times when you just stop and think, wow, it just seems like so many people have this unique problem, especially young people. What would you say are the most common issues you've discovered?
If I put them all into one category, it's not understanding universal laws and their application to human emotions. So what I mean by that is people will come to me and they'll say, I'm depressed, I've got anxiety, I've been labeled a bipolar, and they'll give me a list of mental disorders to kind of, you know, give me an understanding of where they are. But what they don't realize is none of those words actually mean anything to me. Because if I speak to 10 people in a week and the discovery call is an entry-level call that somebody has with me to get an understanding of what it is that I do, also share what they're going through to see if I'm the right person for them and vice versa. And if I speak to 10 people that week and they're all depressed, I find that the root cause, meaning the purpose of why they're actually depressed, can be 5 different things or 10 completely different things. So for me, I'm always wanting to find out, what is the reason for this? So did your mother pass away and you've been depressed since that moment? Did you have a breakup from a relationship and you've been depressed since then? Are you anxious because you fear the loss of life? So finding out what the root cause of those things are. So the one common thing that everybody has is not understanding quite often, like what the root causes or what the exact root cause is when there was a change in their physiology and psychology, the way that they felt and the emotions and the psychology, and why specifically that's occurring, because it's the feedback. A lot of people think there's something happening to them, but they don't understand it's a feedback. And once they address the feedback, then those emotions can dissipate and dissolve forever and permanently. Quite often within minutes and hours, there's no need for that to take weeks, months, or years as well.
Oh, wow. So that seems to be a case of a lack of awareness. I don't know if you would describe it as such. So
no, perfect. Exactly. I'd say because awareness is the ability to see both sides of whatever is occurring within your life. So a good way of explaining it is there's lots of your listeners that may have had something happen that they perceived was traumatic when they were younger as a child, but maybe in their 20s or 30s, if you speak to them about it, they'll kind of laugh because they consider terrific in it as well. So the person that bullied them, they then realized was also the catalyst to them going out and taking on maybe some weightlifting or karate or some form of martial arts. And that's why they love that today. So they can see the terrible and the terrific, and they can see the hidden order within that. And with a greater awareness of both the perceived negatives and the positives, they have full awareness. So anytime that a person has half an awareness, they have an emotion. You see the negatives without the positives, you have a negative emotion. You see a positive without the negatives, you have a positive emotion. But both of those are only half awarenesses, and half awarenesses quite often lead you down a road of emotional turmoil where your emotions run you instead of you running your emotions. So I would definitely define it as a lack of awareness.
And what would someone who finds themselves in that situation do? How do they begin to address those problems, like how they discover what those problems are? Because sometimes I think there's this cloud of, you know, uncertainty, or what I would put it like this, there's this fog that just surrounds our brains, and you have these labels, like you said, that have been thrown on different situations, and you've accepted them and probably even attached an identity to them. And so 100%. It's like the actual problem is so far deep that even when you're having those conversations with someone, it's hard to get to what the real issue is, because the identity from these labels has become so strong that it is now their reality.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think I recently spoke about this on a Facebook Live only about 2 weeks ago, where people are identifying with their symptoms, but their symptoms are feedbacks, not an identity. And I've worked with clients that have experienced anxiety for 10 or so years. And in two sessions, we've let go of the anxiety once we found the root causes around that. And then I've looked at them and said, well, where's your identity now? And they've gone, oh, I guess I got a new identity. I said, no, that was always your identity. The authentic you was always there. You had a symptom that was occupying time and space in your mind. So the best way to explain this is probably to explain where the root cause of all emotions come from, and then explain how perceptions are created. And then by understanding that, people understand what this feedback system I communicate is. So we've got two parts of the brain that are very important for either emotional creation or emotional stability. We have the amygdala. It's the animal mind. And this part of the mind is neither wrong or right. It's a part of the mind that's necessary depending on what circumstance that we're in. But when we were very primitive as human beings, maybe at the point where we hadn't actually learned how to communicate effectively through language to each other, there were a lot of things out in our environment that could potentially attack us as prey, as predators, and we were the prey to that. So the amygdala is either highly polarized to react in a negative or positive way, and it looks to avoid negative and seek positive because that would allow us to survive within that. And it's very emotionally driven. So it's going to try and suppress negative and exaggerate positive emotions. And the amygdala is the part of the brain that most of society is running on. So that's the part of you that gets highly emotional. But there's a problem. And the problem with that is both sides of those are a delusion. So we kind of sell ourselves from one delusion to another. So if you think of a relationship, if you only look for the positives in somebody, you're also going to let the ball all over you, because anybody that you're extremely infatuated with, you minimize yourself and have the fear of the loss of them. Within that, any job that you exaggerate the positive in and minimize the negative, you're not going to look at the potential drawbacks of it. When you get in that job, you'll discover all the other sides of it as well. I've worked with plenty of clients where they're infatuated with a job, but anything you infatuate over, you also create the anxiety for the fear of the loss of it as well. Mm-hmm. So the higher the infatuation, the greater the fear of the loss. So you can never have one extremity in one side. And the truth is that everything in life has two sides. The partner that you thought was absolutely amazing, always beautiful, always nice, never mean, as you get to know them 6 months, a year, 3 years, get married, you can see both sides of them. So your friends may still say to you, oh my goodness, your partner's really hot, but you'll be living with them enough to say that they just constantly do protein farts and they're obsessed with the way that they look, and he takes more time on his hair than I do, and you'll be able to see the other side of that person. So the amygdala can only see one side, and it deletes another side, which creates emotional volatility. The more advanced part of the mind, the prefrontal cortex, that's a more advanced part that we evolve to much later on in life, and it brings balance to pairs of opposites and normalizes human physiology, because when you can see both sides, you're rational, and rational means a ratio of positive to negative. So the prefrontal cortex looks for both sides, and the emotional part of you looks to fundamentalize both sides. So it's no kind of mystery that the more fundamental a society is, and the more primitive, the more black and white their thinking is, the more advanced a culture is, you start to see that they actually debate both sides and look to understand both sides as well as they evolve. So if all of our emotions stem from the amygdala attempting to avoid a positive and get a negative, and as long as we're thinking within the amygdala, that's when we end up creating a lot of our symptoms. Depression is a comparison, for example. It's when something has occurred in the past and you perceive what occurred to be a negative because you're addicted to the positive. In other words, I can't believe I broke up with my ex, making being with the ex positive and them breaking up with you negative. But quite often, if we look at both sides, you'll realize that the breakup was due to the fact that there were quite a few negatives that were occurring in the relationships that led to the breakup. If it was all positive, you would have stayed together. So the amygdala starts creating these highly polarized emotions. You're going to have to excuse me. I've just got a little bit of hay fever. But the amygdala will create highly polarized emotions. And when it does, they sit within two spaces, psychology and physiology. Because anything that goes extreme towards a negative or positive occupies time and space in the mind. And I believe you said something similar to this before, brain noise or brain fog. So whenever you break that one-to-one ratio of seeing something equally positive and negative, you actually start, let's say, 5 negatives or 7 negatives to 1 positive. That's a perception which happens from the eyes and through your senses, from an external event, situation, or thing that's occurred. The central nervous system, meaning the brain, makes an assessment. So let's say 7 negatives to 1 positive. It sends that signal all through the body, goes through neurology, goes through the autonomic nervous system, all the way down to the cellular level. It's not one part of your body that doesn't get any perception that you have communicated to it. But the autonomic nervous system, its purpose is to actually regulate human emotions and regulate chemical and hormone distribution. All emotions are chemical and hormone distributions. So if you said 7 times more negative, 1 times more positive, it's made out of a sympathetic and parasympathetic, also known as a fight or flight or rest and relaxation. You just told the fight or flight to activate chemically 7 times more and the rest and relaxation only 1 time. So when you do that, you have extremes in chemical and hormone distributions, and every emotion that you experience, anger, fear, sadness, hurt, guilt, resentment, happiness, joy, etc., they're all like having different cocktails at a bar. And if you have 7 times more shots than 1, you're going to end up pretty drunk. So the same with our perceptions. And we know that because you may have had something happen in front of you and it was so extreme that when it occurred, you felt differently immediately, very sad, very angry, very frustrated, etc. But we already know from a scientific standpoint the different chemicals and organs that are related to them. So if you think of, say, somebody having extreme stress, you know that it's adrenaline to the heart. And if they're having maybe 7 times more in terms of their perceptions in that moment, more towards the negative and the fight and flight, and that's a lot. So that's going to do a few things to try and help you bring yourself back to balance. This is going to create dis-ease. Your body's not at ease. You're not comfortable. And disorder, that's not the way that you feel that you're meant to be running your body and your psychology. So it occupies time and space in your mind. That's brain noise. And yeah. Anything above a 1-to-1 ratio creates more brain noise, 6-to-1, 8-to-1, 10-to-1, etc. The higher it is, the more brain noise. So that's when you can't stop thinking about something. It's just frustrating the hell out of you. And then physiologically, you feel the emotions directly proportionate to that as well. So that's when you're feeling, can't get this thing out of your head, can't get it out of your body. Now, that's just a feedback to let you know that you have imbalanced perceptions and you're holding on to them. And the amygdala was only ever created to be a short burst situation, a tiger coming to try and attack you. It would activate immediately, and it usually activates faster than the forebrain unless you actually teach it how to do that, because that's required for survival. The problem is when you're in an office and nothing's really occurring and you're feeling like you're highly acting in that area, then you're creating, like, so let's say a tiger was to attack you, your pupils will dilate, so you could see more and much more clearer. The muscle fibers would increase in strength. That's why if you were younger and you've had a fight with your sibling and then later on you realize that you were bruised but you didn't notice it in the fight, it was because adrenaline was also released through your body to make sure that you could take a blow and not actually in that moment feel it as much as you normally would. It's maximizing your potential for a dangerous circumstance. But not getting your way in life by having a slight argument with your partner and holding on to that for years, that's not what the amygdala is made for. But that's the way we're utilizing it these days. So all emotions stem from imbalanced perceptions where the amygdala takes over, and we don't transition beyond that until we actually bring balance to our mind, which then controls how our body feels by elevating to the forebrain. So that's what the one common thing that all of my clients have in common. And by doing the DeMartini method, we get clear on the root cause, we balance their perceptions around that through psychology, and it restores physiology.
Okay, so a little bit on that DeMartini method. By the way, that was an amazing explanation. I've never really heard that sort of breakdown before. So how exactly would you get someone to bring that ratio to a 1-to-1? Let's just say a rough summary. I know that's a lot to distill in such a short time, but, you know, just roughly, what would that entail?
No problems. I'm used to getting asked questions like that. How does the universe exist in 5 or less words? So it matters on what specifically the charge is towards, because the DeMartini method comes in a few different forms. I've also created a few different forms myself. Then they're all to do with equilibrium, because the body strives for equilibrium and balance. But let's say a person comes to me and they say, I'm frustrated, or in fact, I can even go one stage before that. Before clients work with me, I send them out a pre-consultation form, does an analysis and evaluation of their whole life. And it goes decade by decade, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30. half of that says, what are all the perceived positives that have occurred within your life? And then the other half says, what are all the perceived negatives? And they're just putting on the things that they're holding on to or that have occurred that have been pivotal within their life. So they may just write dad, mum, rape, kidnapped. I'm just coming up with extremes, but they'll have a range of things. Then when we have our first pre-consultation, it's like going to a heart surgeon. You wouldn't go in there and say, oh, my heart's not well. And they wouldn't say to you, just jump on the table, let's cut you open and have a look. They'd want to have a look at an x-ray because that's a look at what's happening right now and understand a medical history. That's an understanding of the past. So I do the same psychologically and physiologically as well with a lot of my clients. But once we get an understanding of those and they communicate about them, a hierarchy starts to present itself. Because if they've got a few things that are negative and I ask them about it and they go, a lady I worked with, she had a brother in there. I said, you got your brother in the negative. And there's a 1 to 5 scale. And that one was a 1, which is not that much. 5 is huge. I said, so tell me about that. And she goes, I just wish we had got along a little bit more. That was a 1. She barely altered her physiology, her tonality, barely changed at all. But when I asked her about her mother, I won't be able to say everything she said. It was a little more profound, but I'll water it down. Her mum was in her 10 to 20 and it was a 5. I said, tell me about your mother. And she said, if I see that bleep, I'm going to bleep, bleep, bleep. So it was just a whole range of, and it was immediate. Like the intensity in which she said it was not like I said, it was if I see that, and she really changed. So, as a professional, I just kind of highlighted her mum in my form and moved to the next thing. But there was a clear indication in the change of physiology, the change of tonality, the change in energy. I mean, she crossed her arms and her face went pink. You could just see that change. So by the time we went through everything, there was a clear hierarchy and understanding of what was the highest priority thing that was occupying the most time and space and having the most effect within her life, down to the least. So once we figure out what that is, we then have to know, because the form allows you to work on different things, is it a resentment? Meaning, is she resenting certain aspects? For her, it was, yes, it was. She was resenting a range of things that her mum had done and not done that she thought she should have during her life and she was holding on to. But we also had some things she was infatuated with in her mum, things that she had exaggerated the positive and missed about her mother and wished she had done more of. So we had to do those two forms. But then there was also, so that's side A, where you work on the perceived positives in the DeMartini method, side B, where you work on the perceived negatives. And then there's also a side C form for things that you perceive to be missing. And that was also relevant too, because she hadn't spoken to her mum or seen her for about 15 years. So there were aspects about her that she was actually, as much as she hated her, she missed those aspects too, because there was a range of emotions on different levels. So we used those forms, and each form targeted a specific thing. So if we look at the perceived negatives, that was the first thing we needed to work on, because that was what she was most charged at. We started with column number 8 on the DeMartini form, and I said, what specific traits, actions, or inactions do you perceive that your mother demonstrated and displayed that you most dislike, despise, and consider negative? So this is the difference between my work and psychology, psychiatry, counseling, a range of other fields. Not that I'm calling anything good or bad, but it's just a comparison. Instead of saying, how do you feel? And I sit back and have a bit of a snooze and then charge for an hour in that session. It was, let's get crystal clear on what specifically it is. So it was verbally yelling at me, not listening to me, ignoring my phone calls. We got to very specific traits, actions, or inactions. And the reason we're doing those instead of feelings, because the reason you feel that way is because they demonstrated the trait, action, or inaction. So we can get down to the root cause. Whereas a person thinking about feelings quite often doesn't actually ever get down to what it really was that person did. And then the rest of the columns balance out a person's perceptions around that. Because if they think it's extremely negative, we show them the positive and bring it into balance. But there's a lot more that the columns do, but each one of those neutralizes and brings human physiology back into its balanced state.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's quite comprehensive. And when you talked about the change in physiology, I could really relate to that, because sometimes when people go through a really traumatic, maybe not so traumatic, but a life-changing experience, and they have not been able to work through exactly how that makes them feel, how it impacts their life, and, just give it its place and not let it affect them, they are unknowingly, or let's say we are unknowingly, stuck in that moment in time. So when you talk about other topics, the person can look normal, but the moment you touch that topic that really hits the spot, it's as though the person is transported to that moment in time where everything happened, and their physiology just changes to fit that moment. So if it happened when they were kids, it's almost as if the person takes on the physiology of a child again, like the appearance just completely changes. And yeah, I can relate to that. It also helped me to realize the things that were disturbing me the most. So when I had to share, I normally don't share a lot, and you can ask me lots of questions and I answer them logically. I'm a more logical person when answering most questions, but the moment it starts to get to me, then I personally observe how my body changes, my emotions change, and yeah, I use that to work through what the root cause of, you know, the things happening around me might truly be.
So yeah, I 100% agree with you. And in terms of the change in physiology, one of the things that I can say about that is, depending on our perceptions, just kind of like that lady I spoke about, whatever our perceptions are about something, if they don't change, so if it's still a 9-to-1 moving towards the negative, whenever we experience something in the future that reminds us of that, because in the initial moment of perception that it occurred, so let's say I know there was a moment when I was annoyed at my father before we got into a physical fight when I was younger. And in that moment that I initially got charged at him, more towards a negative charge, you have all of your senses, 5 of which we're most commonly aware of. We are more than that. But I saw what my dad was wearing in the environment. So that became caught up in the moment. Mm-hmm. I heard the particular tone that my father had within that. I had a sense of what the environment and feeling. So we put all of these things together, and then we create what's known as triggers and anchors. So in the future, if something occurs that could be one or a multitude of those senses, because quite often some senses, I'm a more visual person. So that's the sense that can quite often be a little more sensitive to me. But if one thing that triggers that off or a multitude of things, then we get triggered into the same response again. And if we haven't evolved beyond that, meaning once again, what you said earlier, lack of awareness, we're only aware of what we're aware of. So it brings us back into that space with the same degree of thinking. That's why if we've evolved beyond it and we can see both sides of it, we may just laugh at it or not feel anything because the thinking has evolved. But whenever we get triggered by something or we have an anchor, just like a ship drops an anchor and still connected to a certain point, if we have unconscious anchors that are all around us through and we collect them through life of things that have happened, then yes, that's why we end up being in that same response and activating, and potentially people say they react the same way they did when they were 12 when that happened. And that's because they never evolved beyond it. My saying is, and it's not my own, but I've learned it from my mentors, you can be a victim of your history or a master of your destiny, but you can't be both. Mm. And that's why with the work that I do with my clients, but here's a great one. I was working with this woman and her chiropractor had referred her across to me. He had completed some of my courses before and I'd worked with him one-on-one for his specific challenges of in his life. But he let me know that any time that he tried to adjust this particular woman, and sometimes a chiropractor has to be at the front or behind you for adjustments, but anytime he was behind her, she would tense up. And he said, I need her to be a lot more relaxed so I'm able to actually assist her with the service that she's come to see me for. So I worked with her, and the particular thing we worked on was a neighbor when she was around, I think it was 15 or so, attempting to stab her in the back. Something happened to the neighbor and the neighbor had psychologically lost it and actually started targeting her and her family. And she was traumatized by that. It created a post-traumatic stress disorder. Well, in the first official session when we started working on that, it only took us one session, an hour and a half, to actually break through that, because she had been seeing that as an all negative thing that had occurred within her life and now feared people standing behind her in case it would happen again. But when we looked at the other side of it, because I let her know that you never have a stressing about a blessing. You know, anything that's extremely perceivably negative will also have an opposite side to it that has helped you grow and evolve. So as we started to stack up the benefits in that particular moment, she realized that she lived in a small country town, but that was a catalyst to her parents leaving that town and going to a big city. And from going to the big city, that was what gave her the opportunity to work in some of the areas that she worked in. And because of that, she's been able to travel the world and see the most beautiful things. And the people that she was originally friends with that she's added on Facebook are just still in that small town and not doing much to themselves. Wow. And as she saw the life that she's actually been able to live, she's the person that her friends in that small town wish that they were. And she had never taken the time to see the blessings equal to the stressings. So by the time we were done, I said, well, can you see if that event had not occurred, that you would have stayed in that town. You just would have lived a small life. You never would have left it. You just would have looked to marry the local guy. You would have got a very low income job. And she said yes, and she cried. I remember working on the phone. She cried, and she goes, "I'm so grateful that that moment occurred, because although I perceived it to be stressing, it was also the catalyst to creating the life that I have today. And it's nothing that I change about that." And in that moment, she realized that there was a blessing and a stressing equally. And if we look at the people that have done, the people that have had the most perfect life, and they woke up and their families looked after them, nothing was wrong. Generally, the perceived area of trauma became the area that they decided that they were inspired to do everything they would to create change. So that's what occurs. So anytime that we can't see the blessing equal to the stressing, we're going to have a trauma. But there's always a terrific, no matter what the trauma is. And I've done the most extreme cases. And the minute that a person lets go of that, they run their emotions instead of their emotions running them.
Oh, well, so it's like you have to be able to get a bird's eye view of the situation. You know, even though you might feel a certain way about what happened, but if you're able to just look beyond how you feel and get the full picture, then it might not really be as limiting as you think.
It never is. I'm yet to find one case in 11 years and a couple of thousand clients where, because we create a bias, we have a confirmation bias in certain things. This is all negative and there's no positive, it did this, etc. But as long as we do that, it's going to occupy time and space in our mind. It's like us drinking poison and hoping somebody else dies. That's not the way that it goes. So I'm yet to find anything that I've worked with in the most extreme cases where a person wasn't able to alter their own perceptions around it and alter their destiny. And quite often when they do, whatever it was that occurred, they usually end up being the person that's able to assist other people out of it as well. That's the really powerful and amazing thing in terms of what I've worked with. But we really do hold the power to alter our perceptions, which in turn unconsciously and consciously alter their actions. And gives us back our power as to how we're going to live our life. And the people that have been through the most extreme perceived traumas, they're often the ones that when they break through that, I find they're the most inspired to help people.
Yes, yes. Okay, so let's talk about your coaching experience. And one thing I'm usually concerned about when it comes to, well, it's not like I really do a lot of coaching, but when I think about people who do coaching or therapy, I think you encounter so many situations and you hear so many stories that there are times when if you encounter a lot of traumatizing stories, you might start to sort of lose faith in humanity. So you need a lot of positive exposure as well to be able to approach those situations from a balanced perspective, especially if you have a lot of mentally afflicted clients coming to you. I think it can sort of wear on you. I don't know if that happens to you. That's just my perspective and what I think happens. Just let me know what your own experience is like.
I'm very grateful that I've discovered the Demartini method, because I've spent out of my own money over $350,000 on personal growth and evolution. And there were a lot of methodologies that I learned. I started off with NLP, timeline therapy, hypnosis. I worked with very closely psychiatrists and psychologists, some of which still refer over their extreme clients today. And where a person would just be sitting there and listening to somebody in their perceivably traumatic story for days, weeks, months, or years. Now, as one of my clients once said to me, I said, "How do you feel after this session?" She goes, "I felt depresso espresso before. And now I feel absolutely enlightened and amazing." I think I would feel depressed if I had to listen to people's negative stories all day. The one great thing about the work that I do is that we're actually taking the specifics of the traits, actions, and inactions and bringing them to balance. So every session, I'm seeing someone break through something. And at the end of it, I'm guaranteeing results. So they break through whatever they came to work on in that. So I'm actually very blessed in of that I can take the most extreme cases. I never hold on to them. And I learned this in my first year. I was doing a methodology not as powerful as the Demartini method, but it's called timeline therapy. And I used to have this very highly detailed form that a person would fill. And in that form, it would give me an understanding of their language, and I have to write everything they said in exactly the way they said it. And pardon to your audience if they see me drinking this massive glass that looks about the size of my head. That's a honey lemon. I've just got hay fever, which has attacked me just before this call. So that's why I'm constantly blowing my nose. But I would take down everything they said exactly the way that they said it. And then we'd balance all the emotions, and I'd read it back to them, and they wouldn't be able to associate to that. So after my first 100 clients, I realized that whatever they were giving me on that form was a one-sided perception. But when they saw both sides, they couldn't even relate to it. It got so extreme one day that I read it back to a lady, and she laughed and said, "I never said that." And I said, "Yes, you did." And she goes, "You're always cracking jokes. I like to make my sessions a lot of fun when I work with people, because if you're working with a lot of trauma, but you can make it something interesting and you can make it actually enjoyable and they break through it, a person's more likely to apply that process later on in their life through other challenges." But I had to hand the form over to her and show her everything that she said verbatim, and she couldn't believe it. So that's when it really clicked to me. And I said, "Hold on a second. If that was only 45 minutes ago and she created so much change in 45 minutes that she doesn't even believe that she said that, then what they're originally telling me is a lie. They just don't know it's a lie." But when they see the truth for both sides, they don't even believe it. So why should I believe their lie when I know they're just going to get to the truth if they do the work? Wow. So that was in my first year, after about my first 100 clients. And since then, when a person tells me a perceived trauma, I know they're only telling me a half truth, and I won't really buy into that until they tell me the full truth, or to see both sides, and then I see them create the change. So I don't have days where I just listen to people. I have no interest in a person's story. If the person wants to run a story, I'm not the person to work with. I guarantee results because I'm there to transcend the story. So yeah, but it's true. There's a lot of there's a lot of therapists that I work with or know as friends. And when we catch up for a coffee, boy, they look like they're drained. And there's only one reason. The field that they're applying is not working. And they're going in consult after consult and watching a person and listening to their story, and it's draining them. Yeah. Because they're not actually creating the change that they went there to change. And instead of moving to another methodology, they're just consistently doing the same thing. And I think it's like beating your head against a wall. I have no interest in that.
Great. So I've been very interested in the concept of a balanced life. People talk about it a lot, and I'm not sure if we really know what that means. So I want to hear your perspective on that. There are those who say that you really can't have a balanced life. You have to just focus on one thing. And then there are those who insist that you have these key areas of your life and you have to keep everything on a level, you know, on a level balance. What do you say about that?
Well, I have a whole course on that, my level three, my level one, where people come in with a specific challenge and we balance the perceptions around that. My level two program, I teach them the tools so they can do it themselves. And they have all the tools that I have. And then my level three, we apply that to all areas of life. It's absolute stupidity to have a system where you think you can only just run one area of your life and ignore the others. It's just not going to work. And if a person doesn't believe that, no problems. Go focus on your career and stop thinking about your relationship. See how long that lasts for you. So it's just not going to work. So there are many different ologies that have taught different like labels for it. Some have six areas of life, some have five. I use seven. Now, I've heard others that have eight. That's fine. But the ones that I most focus on is physical, financial, mental, spiritual, social, vocation, and family. And I found that in all those seven, you're going to have some areas that resonate with you more because they're higher in your values. So my fiance, right, actually, it's now my wife, as of last weekend, but she's pregnant and we're due for our first child. So I've noticed that family and family creation has moved up on her values. So she'll do that instinctively without thinking and set goals towards that. Finances will be second on her values because that kind of supports that first value to a degree. So there's some areas that we'll look to instinctively master and advance in. But then we have other areas that we may not value as much. But the challenge becomes, in 11 years of consulting, I've seen this, the area that you neglect becomes the area where your biggest challenges come in. So if a person is highly into business, which is vocation, highly into financial mastery, but not really into building their relationship, then they'll usually attract somebody that they'll infatuate over, and they won't know how to manage their emotions, and that, and that person will take a certain amount of their money and challenge them to actually grow their level of evolution within that. So the wisest thing we can do is set up a system where we can attempt to manage all seven areas in a way that fulfills us, and look for inspiring challenges within that. And yes, it is difficult. It's extremely difficult. That's why it's a level three program, not a level one program when I work with my clients, because I have to teach them how to manage their emotions, because as they're trying to manage the seven areas, emotions come up for imbalanced perception. So if they've got a technique to be able to address those in minutes and hours, then they can get back to actually attempting to do that. I do it for a thing called the Wealth Maximizer Calendar. So I set up a calendar, I write all seven areas of my life. I change it a couple of times a year based on, you know, daylight savings and that kind of thing. But 12 hours a day, I do work. That's the most inspiring and fulfilling thing for me that I can do. If I work less than 12 hours, I find that I just go back to doing work. If I do more than that, I feel it's too much. So I'm very highly energized if I do work, as you can hear right now. But work is a multitude of things for me. It's financial mastery. That's how I make my money. It's mental mastery. That's where I'm challenged every single day with my clients. It's social mastery. That's my favorite way of communicating with my clients as well, because as long as I'm communicating with them about things that are inspiring to them or challenges that they have in my area of expertise, I can't wait to do that. I'm not interested in, I don't drink anymore, so I'm not interested in going for a coffee and hearing somebody whinge. If I can't help them overcome the whinging, it just becomes like a very weird space for me to be in for that. So I can hit about four areas of life, and vocation, that's my career as well. But before that, I spend about an hour with my wife and then 2 hours at the end of the day. So that's family time. So I've hit about five areas of life now within that. And then I do some physical work. So I've got gym and golf that I fit in and, during the day as well, just in between working. So that's physical mastery. So I hit all seven areas. And my Monday to Friday is exactly the same, except I do half a day of golf on Friday. And start halfway through the day. And then on Saturday and Sunday, I do whatever it is that inspires me. So that's my timetable. I maintain it basically throughout the whole year. And it has a little bit for all the seven areas of life and what most inspires me within that. So I've got a system and I teach people how to do that. I don't give them my system because that's based on what my values are. We have a look at what's most inspiring to them. And my clients that do that, and just slowly chip away every single week a little bit at each of those seven areas of life, find that they have higher levels of fulfillment, energy, vitality, and they start setting the tone to what the challenges are in their life instead of having challenges occur because they completely neglected an area in that. And I'll give you a few very common cases. People that go out and do a lot of work but don't focus on their physical health and wellness. So they're overstressed, they're overweight, and then what happens later on, they have a lot of money and all it gets used for is trying to get rid of the cancer or disease that they have in their body because they never took the time and that compounded. People that get addicted to work, but then they don't work on their relationship and then their relationship ends up breaking up. So they lose that within that. People that are have an amazing level of fitness and mental strength, but they're not doing a career that they love. So therefore, they end up working for somebody else and feel trapped and financially within that position. So anytime that we don't help to hit all seven areas, we're going to have challenges. But if you can keep all seven reasonably close and keep an eye on them, usually you set the tone for the challenges, because as you grow in that area, you get inspired to do a little bit more and a little bit more, and you keep pushing in those areas. But the key is to do more in the areas that you love, but still do it in the areas that you don't, but find challenges that inspire you in those areas.
Great. So you need to have a system. I think that's very key. And it might look like something simple, but I think a lot of people neglect the system aspect. So you're trying to do all these things like, okay, yeah, I need to have my relationship work and I need to have my career going great. This needs to work, that needs to work. But then you also want your day to go just however you want. You know, you want to wake up and just do things on a whim. And I think it's because of this myth or this false perspective that everything should flow naturally. So if, you know, I love my family, then I should naturally just make time for them. And if I love my job, then I should naturally be able to do everything when I'm supposed to be doing it. But I think that's really a false perspective. At least for me, I've tried it before. It doesn't work. When you do things on a whim, it just, you get confused and you're not able to make time for some things that are actually important.
Well, the way I see it is, there's two things in that. Whenever a person says I need to, usually they're living within some outer authority's values. Because if you hear the words need to, I want to, I must, I have to, that's not I love to. I love to, that's when you're living within your highest values and the most authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever's highest in your values, you're going to naturally, unconsciously do. We have a thing called human values. And every human being has a unique set of values, not honor and integrity, that you're in alignment with honor and integrity when you do what you value. So my highest value is family creation, because just like my fiance, we're about to have our first child and it's taken us 4 years to get to this point. My second highest value is my business, so working 12 hours a day, human evolution, development, and growth. And the third one is physical vitality. So I'm either playing golf or in the gym. So they're kind of the three highest values, but the highest one is about, you could say it's a 40%, then maybe a 30, and then maybe a 10, and then there's a range of smaller values that fit kind of underneath that. But if you get me to do anything that's alignment with my highest values, I'm organized, disciplined, reliable, and focused. I spontaneously do that. I set goals in that area, and 5 hours will feel like 5 minutes. It just flies. But anything that's lower in my values, I procrastinate, hesitate, frustrate, and 5 hours feels like 5 minutes. These are feedback systems from your body to let you know wherever you're living congruently, but what's most valuable and meaningful to you. So I'm not worried about what people think I need to do. I don't care, because depending on where I go around the world, there's a different perception based on culture and society and religion and all of those things. So I don't worry about any of that, because I can piss people off everywhere. But if I piss myself off, that's when I have an inauthentic life. So I'm more interested in what I'm inspired to do within that. But I set up systems, and my systems have spontaneity within them, but I set up systems because as long as I set up a system where I have, you know, 3 hours to do a particular area, but then I'm doing something that I love within that area, I don't feel I need to. I'm just doing something I love to. I've just set the time aside to do that. The minute prior to running systems, I used to think, oh my goodness, a calendar system that tells me what to do per each block of the day is going to be really rigorous and frustrating. But I realized I only felt that way if I put a list of stuff that I didn't like in there. But then once I actually started putting things that I appreciated, then I went, hold on, this is actually a freedom system. This isn't entrapping myself. This is guaranteeing that I do more of the stuff that I love. Yeah. And I noticed that within my first year, because I went on more holidays, I had more money, I was doing more of the jobs that I loved. So I actually noticed that as long as I was putting things that inspire me within there. But I also noticed that when I first started that system, there were a lot more things that weren't inspiring to me because I hadn't figured out how to delegate yet. Today, I've slowly every year delegated more and more aspects of my business that are not inspiring to me and hired people that that's inspiring to. So I pay them to do that so I could do things that actually provide more money within the business. So every year it's a game of how do I fill this up with more things that are meaningful and inspiring to me and get more handsomely paid in the process.
Great. Well, I think we've covered most of the bases that I was really eager to talk about. If there's anything you really think you want to communicate to the audience, I would love to hear it. And you can also share with us more about what you do and where people can find your content, how they can reach out to you. And I will also include the links in the description for those listening or watching. So please, Emmanuel.
So I guess the major message is to your clientele and your audience that you have the ability to live an inspiring and fulfilling life. And the main things that we discussed today is that whatever you've been through doesn't have to be your story. And you can be a victim of your history, or you can be a master of your destiny. The choice is truly yours. The emotions you're experiencing are feedbacks, so they're not a lifestyle. And when I work with people, I'm very inspired by having a look at your journey that you've been through and getting clear on the biggest challenges so that we can transcend them and get you onto the next level of your evolution and turn them on the way instead of in the way. So that's what I'm inspired by. For any of you that are experiencing challenges within your life, experiencing mental disorders, or maybe you just want to get clarity on what it is that you're here to do and your purpose and your vision and your vocational mastery, feel free to reach out. My website is www.emmanuelaffany.com.au, but we'll leave notes below where you can have a discovery call. So that's a personal one-on-one call with myself, and we can have a look at where you are, what your challenges are. I can explain how you've gotten to that specific place and what it is that you can do to transcend that, and exactly what the specific time frame is and what results I can guarantee. The one beautiful thing about the Demartini method is I'm not here to listen to your problems for days, weeks, months, or years. I'm here to help you transcend them and get to a point where you actually achieve results, because I want you to come in, get a result, and get out and live an inspiring life so I can work with somebody else instead of working with somebody for years and they just end up working on the same problem. So I'll leave those details below, but know that that discovery call is complimentary and it gives us an opportunity to have what I call a virtual coffee, because we're in this amazing space where no matter where you are around the world, we can sit down and have a conversation by video or by audio call. But thank you very much for listening, and I hope that what we discussed today not only resonates with you, but you listen to it a few times and maybe you pick up a couple of nuggets of wisdom that help you create a change in an area or a couple areas in your life that you may have been stuck in or wanting to transcend beyond, and taking actions on the things that we spoke actually helps you do that.
All right. So thank you guys for listening, and I really believe that this has been useful to you. Also, huge thanks to Emmanuel for making it today. Thank you so much. And I wish you all the best. Congratulations on your wedding last weekend and on your baby that's coming soon. Wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right then, guys. Stay healthy, stay happy, and have a wonderful time ahead. Bye.